You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Think I'm okay. Think I'm good to go. Let's carry on with the podcast. It is the Massive Report podcast. After a bizarre few days for your Columbus crew, we'll break it all down with the help of Murph and Ori and Mark and Alex. My name is Brian. Like and comment, like and comment, like and comment. Only 5 stars and positive comments because we are very sensitive men. We'll have our self-esteem crushed if you criticize us in any way. So please save that for Twitter. Okay? Give us the good stuff, and we thank you. Gentlemen, I want to start with the game that was not played on Sunday, just so we make sure that we understand everything that went on behind the scenes leading up to the postponement of the Orlando game on Sunday. And I feel like, Murph, you're the most plugged into this. You talked to some people connected with the team today. Just to clarify, there are no player positive tests that we know of, correct?
That is correct. So over the weekend, the team had 2 staff members, not players, not coaches, just to be clear, test positive. And that requires 2 positive tests, just like it did when they were in Orlando and just like most sports leagues are doing. So you had 2 positive staff members test positive before they got on the plane to fly to Orlando, which they would have done Saturday. Because of that, they did not get on said plane, which was, I think everyone can agree, a smart decision by everyone involved. And so they postponed the game. Since then, they have had 3 rounds of completely negative tests. So that, it seems at least, means that they did a good job of catching this before it started to spread too much. And that, therefore, the league has allowed them to return to practice. And the game tomorrow against FC Cincinnati, it plans to go off as scheduled. Yesterday, the team was allowed to do small group training, which if you remember back to before the MLS is Back tournament, when they were slowly allowing the teams to return to their facilities, that was one of the steps that they let you do was, I don't remember the exact number offhand, but you could do some small stuff. And it didn't really allow you to practice soccer, but it allowed the team to kind of get some guys together and do some soccer-related activities. Today they were allowed to return to full team training, so they practice today. Obviously tomorrow is the game against FC Cincinnati, and we go on from here.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty simple. When will this Orlando match be made up? Because it is, if you look at the table, an important one for both clubs. Do we know when that might be played, and will it be played in such a way that the games are going to be even more crowded together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible that we see this happen in a midweek. So I looked at Orlando's schedule, and it looks like the rest of their scheduled matches are taking place the same days as the Crew's remaining scheduled matches. So Orlando's playing New York City on Wednesday night for this week. And then their next midweek game is on the 28th against Atlanta, which is also the same day Columbus is going to be playing DC United. So all of Orlando's games are happening on the same day as Crew games right now. So I would suspect that you could see a midweek game, whether it be maybe on the 21st before Columbus plays Houston. So that could be a travel day for them. Maybe you see them play mid-November, like maybe November 4th or 5th after the election, because that's another midweek opening. So since all the weekends are taken up for both teams now, Orlando playing games on the 18th, the 24th, November 1st, November 8th, Columbus also playing games that day, the makeup would have to be a midweek, and it looks like it would either be next week between the 20th and the 22nd, or the week of the election between the 3rd and the 5th, just seeing of the possibilities if you want to get this game in before decision day, which is on November 8th.
Yeah, when we talked to Caleb today, I asked him about if the league had said anything in terms of what they were doing. He said Tim Bezbachenko, the president and general manager, is in conversation with the league and Orlando about when to do it. Caleb said there were 3 dates. I got the same dates when I looked at it as Ori, the 21st or the 4th or right about there, depending on what day of the week you want to play it. So I don't know if maybe they're thinking, like Ori said, potentially after the decision day on the 8th to potentially play it just so that the schedule is not as congested. That seems unlikely to me, but Caleb did say three dates. So I don't know when that third date would be, but yeah, just based on my quick examination of the schedule after we got off the press or the Zoom call today, those were the two dates I could find as well. But it sounds like we'll know soon because they want to get this announced and out to the team so that they can prepare accordingly. I don't think this will be one of the things where we wait around for a couple weeks. You know, they don't have a couple weeks, frankly, to get this scheduled.
Well, it's not like Crew are in, you know, the only people in this boat. You've got Colorado that I think has lost five games because of COVID tests. And the league is also, I mean, that there's no way you reschedule that number. And the league is already putting together contingency plans. They're going to apparently, if teams haven't all played the same amount of games, it's going to go by point per game for the standings. And that's how they'll award the Supporters Cup. Or Shield. So MLS, baby.
Well, in their defense, I mean, they're dealing with things that you can only plan so much. And looking at the table right now, Colorado is in a position to fight for a playoff spot. So I don't know what they're going to do there. I mean, the first thing they have to do is get the team cleared up of this thing. And we've seen in other sports that we do the best we can. That's what we got to do. I don't know. Maybe youth soccer tournament style. Just play one game at 8 a.m. and then the next game at 3 in the afternoon. I mean, these guys are highly trained athletes. Let's do that. Let's do mini games or something. Let's play indoor. Something.
Play seven inning doubleheaders and put a guy on second.
Right. Yeah. Give each team a goal. And then, all right. Well, enough of that. It was some housekeeping we need to get caught up and make sure that that we're good to go. We're going to talk about Cincinnati here in a moment. That time will mostly be taken up with Alex making fun of our brethren to the south, because that's a game that we don't even have to bother to preview very much. What else can you say about FC Cincinnati? We'll get to that here in a few minutes. Also, we're playing New York City at home on Sunday evening at 6, and that's a big one. And we've had our 1-0s with them as the season has gone along. You might remember back on March 1st. That was one of them. So we'll get to that as well. But first, we need to go back 6 days and talk about a game that I've been trying to forget. Montreal 2 and the Crew 1. And it was a stunner because I think we all picked the Crew to win the game, did we not? I think we did.
We did.
Yeah, pretty much.
I believe so.
So, Alex, I'll start with you, because you probably had something snarky to say about it. Did you see anything that we were doing wrong differently than we've been doing wrong before in other recent matches that haven't gone our way? What'd you see?
Well, I have something snarky, but not that. First of all, Jossie Zardes scored with his face, and I feel like that should have counted for more than one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and that would have turned the tide a little bit, I think. But in all seriousness, I did not think it was a great performance. But at the same time, I think it's hard to judge this team given the number of injuries that we have. They are trying to kind of throw together some sort of a makeshift system without some of their best players. And, you know, the lack of quality showed. You know, we gave up a goal to Bojan Krkić, who, as a AC Milan fan, knows that he's pretty mediocre. So, you know, it was not the best game. I hope that we get our guys back soon. Cincy we'll talk about. I think, you know, even our weakened squad can probably take care of business there. But as the season goes on, this is going to become a bigger and bigger factor. You know, we have a pretty deep team, but we're stretching that depth pretty thin right now. And it's causing problems, and I think we saw that against Montreal.
Well, Bart, filling in some of those weaknesses would be 18-year-old Aiden Morris, who I was at least agitating for him to be in the starting 11 for that Montreal game. I love that word, agitated. Mm-hmm. And there he was, and he showed so well. I'm really quickly becoming a fan of this kid. 94% pass success rate, a couple of great tackles. One of them, if I remember right, was in the box and took some big clangy ones to try. You miss your timing on that, you're screwed. What'd you see, Bart, from Aiden Morris?
I really thought, I mean, and I don't think I was alone. He's probably the top performer for Columbus in that first half. He just, the level of comfort he has, and you know, decisive. He's not afraid to jump in the play. I mean, he's just all over the pitch. His motor's running. But, you know, a lot of times I think you see with young players and rookies just a little bit of, you know, hesitancy. They're unsure of themselves. This is a kid who looks like he's very comfortable and very confident and feels like he's in the right, you know, right place, and where he should be playing on an MLS field. I thought he was really strong and one of the few, you know, bright points for Columbus in that game.
Murph, what are they saying when you talk to, if anything, when you talk to Coach Porter and maybe some other players about Aiden and his performance lately? Were they expecting this? I've heard that he's a very confident kid.
I would agree with that. And I got that impression. I talked to him right before the season. I wrote something about him and Sebastian and just their time in the academy and their 1 year at college. You know, they've kind of had parallel paths. Neither of them are originally from Columbus or Ohio and came here for various reasons. But, you know, both of them had to do with soccer. And, yeah, I think he is a very confident kid. I think, you know, despite just 1 year at Indiana, a successful year, I might add, he was confident he could come in and contribute to this team, and he certainly has. Caleb Porter talked about when he first saw both of those midfielders that when he became head coach, they were still in the academy, that he was impressed and knew that they were guys that could, you know, step into the first team here soon. And obviously he was spot on with that. They were both in preseason the last 2 years, so obviously had time with the team to show what they could do in, you know, kind of an extended camp action. And I think it's taken a little while for Aiden. We saw Sebastian early on. Aiden was hurt, and I don't know if this got, you know, announced widely in the preseason because they were kind of keeping, if you remember, keeping everybody out of the loop of how their games were going and whatnot. But Aiden was, I think it was an ankle injury that he dealt with. It wasn't anything serious, but he was in and out of training and didn't play a lot in the preseason and whatnot. So I think you're finally seeing him get up to speed. I think he brings an edge that, you know, Sebastian Berhalter reminds me a lot of his dad in terms of the way, you know, he seems to get the tactics and he's got the mental side of the game. And I think Aiden just kind of plays, and, you know, not to say that he's not tactically sound and doesn't, you know, play his role, but you mentioned that tackle, you know, a couple games ago when he made that run kind of uncharacteristically for a Crew Central midfielder deep into the penalty box. You know, he just kind of reads and reacts and plays the game. And I agree with Bart. I thought he was, you know, one of, if not the best player on the field for the Crew for large chunks of that game. Pedro Santos, I thought, was probably their most active guy, but Aiden was right there and they really like him. You know, obviously when everyone is healthy, Darlington Nagbe's the top guy at that central midfield spot and Artur is going to be in there. And, you know, probably Alache is still ahead of both the rookies just because of his experience in the league. But, you know, to have two rookies in crucial spots in the central midfield that have both contributed this season, I think is a positive sign going forward. Not that Darlington Nagbe's going anywhere, but he's not a spring chicken. You know, he's 30. And, you know, so these are two kids that can provide something for you while also learning from these veterans. And I think that's positive.
All right. Well, but I wanted to get some positive things in there. Now let's complain about the officiating. Worry. I don't think that I didn't get the elapsed time between the alleged offense and when they went to VAR and made their ruling, but it seemed like it was about 5 minutes.
Ruling, the first goal or the second goal?
You're right. Now I'm talking about the PK.
The PK, yeah.
Wasn't that the one that took a long time?
That one took a bit of time from the initial call to the VAR, mostly because of the fact that the ball didn't go out of play for 2 minutes after the foul by Harrison Afful, where he basically just jumped on the back of the Montreal attacker. Because
Hector Jimenez.
Yeah, my bad. Because basically you can't VAR something until the ball goes out of bounds.
I understand that, but shouldn't it be like the law? Shouldn't there be a statute of limitations? Like after 5 minutes, it's cleared. I'm being facetious, but
yeah,
was it a foul that was worthy of a penalty kick? I guess that's the important thing.
That's the thing. I think from the letter of the law, it's a foul and it is a penalty. I think it's just the fact that we've seen the inconsistencies of VAR for the last 2 years, essentially. So letter of the law, it's a penalty, but at the same time, you see softer penalties called with VAR. You see harder challenges called as well. So that's the thing about it that could get somebody talking about, oh, it wasn't a penalty at all. It should never be a penalty. Letter of the law it is, but Caleb Porter basically discussed after the game that he's not going to harp on the two calls because even with the first goal, you saw Afful basically handball the second rebound because Bojan basically hit one off the bar, and then Lapalainen had a rebound that hit off of Afful's hand.
That was a weird play.
And then he got another rebound that went in, which was the goal. Yeah. And, you know, part of you thinks, well, shouldn't the whistle automatically be blown after the handball and Afful get a red or a yellow and then a penalty? And that third attempt shouldn't even be counted. But Caleb Porter didn't harp on the calls. It wasn't a good team performance, and he basically highlighted that because it shouldn't be based off of two officiating decisions that are worthy of a discussion. Some would say maybe controversial. I think maybe not controversial, but worthy of a discussion and is debatable between people because of the inconsistencies we've seen from officiating in MLS and the even more consistencies we've seen with the addition of VAR in world football since 2018. So debatable and definitely worth a discussion. But overall, the Crew, in terms of a team performance, they didn't play well enough to win this game.
Well, I mean, Harrison's the play. To me, I look at it like, and maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but as advantage. And it happened so quickly. But in that particular case, I wasn't bothered by the fact that they scored after the handball because it was just like, they probably would have scored anyway. I'm not going to harp on that. Mm-hmm. It was a dumb play by Harrison, who, by the way, and I believe, Alex, you were the one that was paying attention to this the most on Twitter during the match. This is a couple of games now where we've seen some less than stellar play defensively from Harrison.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's struggling as we kind of get into the home stretch of the season. You know, I don't know if it's the number of games that he's having to deal with or what. But, you know, Harrison Afful is a very, very physical player up and down the pitch all the time, puts in a lot of miles every game, and he's 34 years old. And I don't know if he's just getting tired mentally and physically or what the story is. But, you know, as the season drags on, I think at points in time, he's a liability, which sucks because he's a great player. He's one of the hardest working guys on this team. But yeah, he's made a number of dumb mistakes in the last handful of games. And, you know, he's cost the team a couple goals. So it's not ideal for sure.
Art, are we going to see Harrison perhaps take more of a background role, take a seat in more matches coming up? And if so, who slots in for
him? I think that one's difficult. I think the first choice, you know, to your second question, it'd be Chris Cadden, I think. You know, there's a good chance, you know, maybe Hector Jimenez, just because that's a guy that Caleb Porter seems to trust. And of course, he's that Swiss Army knife. But I think Chris Cadden, you know, it's a position he's played there naturally. I think he's got, you know, higher upside or ceiling than Hector Jimenez gives you. With that being said, I think the difference in why you haven't seen Harrison, you know, get that hook yet is just because what he brings to the other end of the pitch. And he's just so electric, you know, offensively, has such good, I mean, there are times when he's leading the Crew attack, and you just, that's such a big drop off when you put, you know, anyone else in there, and that impacts the outlay of the game just as much as his defensive shortcomings come. So I think, and I think really they've done the, you know, arithmetic, and they think actually he brings more just with his offensive prowess, and that's why they're willing to, you know, take some of these defensive lapses. But I do think, you know, just from the mileage, if they're able to, you know, keep some time off You know, now he's going to have at least a week off before between games. So I think you see him in Cincinnati. But as more of these games get compressed, especially if they do reschedule and squeeze that Orlando game in there somewhere, I wouldn't be surprised to see Cadden get a couple. And I think if you're Caleb Porter, you want to see Chris Cadden too, just so you can evaluate him for 2021 and beyond, because we know Harry's time. It's not a given.
I also think that, you know, it says something about what they're seeing from Cadden in training, the fact that we're not seeing more of him. You know, he's somebody who should be rotating in with everybody else, and he's been really far down the pecking order. And I mean, we've seen more of the young midfielders than we've seen in Chris Cadden. And he was a guy who was supposed to be able to come in and quickly rotate in for guys. And, you know, we've seen a lot of Hector. We haven't seen much of Chris. We saw a little bit of him early on in the season, saw a little bit of him in the COVID cup thing and in the bubble. I didn't think he looked that good. And I'm worried that maybe the team feels the same way and he hasn't really shown much more. So maybe they didn't get out of Chris what they thought they would. And maybe that's kind of why we haven't seen much of him, but he's someone that we may need, whether he's looking good or not, as these games start to compress a little bit.
Well, I know some guys, they just need to play. I mean, we see that in all sports. You see guys explode onto the scene with a new club, and it's just simply because they got an opportunity. Maybe that opportunity will be back for Oxford United. Would they just send it back for it?
Oh yeah, no, I just for those fans when he signed, when they announced that the crew signed him, and just this is absurd. How could he choose Columbus over such a storied club like Oxford? But now maybe he's having some buyer's remorse too.
Well, they are smarter than we are in Oxford, you know.
Oh yes, yeah. So just by osmosis, by being near that institution and having English accents,
right?
They're smarter.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'd like to see more of them. I think there's something in there, but we're not at training, so we don't know. And Murph, that's been your challenge all season, is you're sort of blind to what's going on in training. What don't we understand about training and how important it is to the players that see the pitch and don't see the pitch? Put a percentage on it, if you would. Just give us some understanding.
It's interesting you say that, because Caleb Porter actually brought up today in talking about this, you know, the COVID tests and whatnot, that, you know, they only will have one day of training before the Cincinnati game, but that's kind of become the norm for them. You know, there's been so much Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, or Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday weeks where, you know, you don't do any, the team that played on game day doesn't do anything the day after the game. They do recovery. Then they sort of work their way back in the next day. And then that third day you're back out in training, but it's your only day training that week. So I am wondering if guys like Cadden have not gotten, despite the schedule being more condensed, haven't seen as much opportunity because they're not getting to train with, you know, the first team. And the crew normally does a good job of mixing in guys. You know, it's not generally just the starting 11 against the backups and whatnot. So I wonder if there's something to that a little bit. We've mentioned Jordan Hamilton on here and whatnot too. But I think, you know, what you do in training is going to get you on the field, especially under Caleb Porter. You know, he's not a guy to just hand people minutes because they're on the roster. I mean, you know, we saw it last year. It took a while until a guy like Connor Maloney got on the field, and there just had to be a ton of injuries. These guys certainly have to earn it. It's unfortunate that there's not the opportunity or as much opportunity right now for them to do it. But I think Alex made a point. Chris Cadden hasn't looked like the guy that we heard about. And there hasn't been a ton, you know, Harrison Offal's been healthy. So he's been out there, and that's a guy who I think we all know can run for days. So, you know, the defensive liabilities have always been a thing with him, but, you know, I'm just wondering if maybe Chris Cadden just, you know, isn't an MLS level starter at this point, still fairly young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think with MLS, you have to have some of those roster guys that maybe, you know, you're not going to play a lot, but they're good practice players. They're not going to complain about not playing. And, you know, I'm not, again, not being there. It's hard to say for someone like Chris Cadden. You know, there have been guys in the past where I've been asked, you know, why isn't so-and-so playing? He looked so good when he came in for 10 minutes in an Open Cup game. It's like, well, you just saw him for 10 minutes in an Open Cup game. You know, these coaches watch him every day and whatnot. So tough to say for sure. And again, another weird thing for this season. But yeah, I would be interested to see a little bit more of him just because there was a bit of hype when he obviously signed and then the loan and whatnot.
Well, tomorrow's game in Cincinnati is an excellent opportunity to just draw names out of a hat and throw his light up on the field. It would probably do pretty well. Alex, I'm going to save your thoughts because I'm sure you have the most. You think more about FC Cincinnati than anyone does. And so we'll eventually get to you, Alex. But
well, can I respond to that comment? Just not about FC Cincinnati. The reason that I enjoy following FC Cincinnati so much is this is a really bad year, right? There's very little joy. There's a lot of stress involved. There are very few things that we can all count on.
This is true.
What you can count on day in, day out, week in, week out, is that FC Cincinnati will make you happy if you want them to lose. It's just the best. So, yeah, I'll save my thoughts for later. But
all right. Well, I know that Ori was crunching the numbers before we got started with the Massive Report podcast tonight. And I asked you, how many wins, how many points would the Crew need to clinch a playoff spot? Because we understand that Toronto has. And then I also asked you to crunch the numbers to see what Cincinnati's chances were, just as sort of a mathematical thought exercise. What did you turn up?
Yeah, I mean, Pat and I basically talked about this before the podcast started. So Toronto FC is the first team in MLS in 2020 to clinch a playoff spot because they sit on 37 points. And in 10th place, you have Atlanta United. And as we've mentioned, you know, repeatedly, the playoffs are expanded for the Eastern Conference. There's going to be 10 teams in the postseason in the East and 8 in the West. And Atlanta's on 18 points with 17 games left, 6 games left, because every team's going to play 23. Atlanta's maximum is 36. So because 10th place's maximum is 1 point lower than Toronto, Toronto clinches that spot. And with those numbers, assuming Atlanta continues to not win games, Atlanta are playing Miami tomorrow and Toronto on Sunday, both on the road, potentially might not be able to get a point or two in those two games. Columbus basically would need to win two more games to likely clinch a playoff spot. You've got Philadelphia on 34 points, and if they get one more win, they'll be on 37. They'll also join Toronto. So the magic number for Columbus is probably to get 2 wins, 6 points, and Wednesday's game against Cincinnati is a momentous opportunity to get those 3 points to make things a lot more comfortable in getting a playoff spot. And it's interesting now, since we're getting towards the end of the regular season, to look at what a playoff bracket would look like now. If the season were to end today, assuming home market playoffs, which I think it's safe to assume that is going to happen, Columbus would host New England in sort of the quarterfinal round of the playoffs, while Toronto and Philly would get a bye, and Cincinnati would be in 13th. Now, in regards to Cincinnati's playoff chances, they're a lot slimmer now. They're 5 points back of 10th. Cincinnati haven't scored in 5 games. The last goal they scored was an Olympico against the Red Bulls, which is direct corner shot, which is the most ridiculous thing you can do. So Cincinnati has a hard time just scoring regular goals that other teams know how to score, because Jaap Stam has built the biggest bus in the 25-year history of Major League Soccer. And Cincinnati is not in last place, because DC United have had one of the worst seasons in their club's history with 2 wins out of 17 games, but have scored 5 more goals than Cincinnati. So for Cincinnati to potentially get into that 10th or 9th spot, they would need to win out, and they would need help from Atlanta and Chicago and Montreal to lose more games. Unlikely that since he would get a playoff spot, they would need a miracle. They would need to change their form around real quick. But if you're the Crew, I think based off of what Caleb Porter and the players have told us, I think seeding is not something they might be overly concerned about. I think the only seeds that they would be partially concerned about is top 4 to at least secure home field advantage for at least 1 game in the playoffs. If you get three or four, assuming Philly or Toronto or one of the top two teams win, then you would go on the road for the Eastern Conference semifinal game. And then depending on what happens, home or away for the final, don't know. So we'll see what happens. But for Columbus, two wins will probably do it. And they got to win against Cincinnati. A win at Nippert is important.
Well, it's a trap, too, because if you look at Cincinnati, we've talked about them ad nauseum on this podcast because they keep turning up on our schedule. The trap is the nil-nil draw. Philadelphia saw that a few weeks ago. That's a loss because that's all they're trying to do. Murph, at this point, when you talk to Caleb Porter and the players that are offered up for discussion, what at this point are they even saying about Cincinnati? I mean, even they have to be just really struggling to because you don't want to talk down to your opponents. I mean, what do they say about them?
Well, Caleb Porter brought up today that it was this is the fourth time that they've played this year, which he said was strange. But he also said that, and I quote, "On the long list of weird things this year, that's probably low on the list, strangely enough." Mm-hmm. But he did admit that he doesn't, you know, you don't see this very often when you play a team that many times. He said it may have happened to him in Portland, where they played both Seattle and Portland played each other twice in the regular season, once in the Open Cup and once in the playoffs. But obviously all of these games have been MLS regular season games, if you are still counting MLS's back that way. But in terms of actual FC Cincinnati talk, Jonathan Mensa mentioned, you know, that these games are like any rivalries in MLS. They're always, an interesting game, that the crew's going to be motivated. And obviously coming off the loss, as we mentioned, you know, they thought they would have this Orlando game to kind of get right and then, you know, have the normal rivalry game. Well, now you're trying to get right in a rivalry game. And it's a place that you talked about, that 0-0 tie that FC Cincinnati wants. That's what they did the last time they went to Nippert. So there's certainly motivation here for the crew, and they didn't shy away from that fact.
Art, how are you seeing all this?
I think you hit the nail on the head pretty well with the trap game, but I think what the crew do have going for them is that they already had that trap game this past week against Montreal and got burnt there. So I think this, you know, this is a team that's going to come in eager to, you know, you don't have any, I mean, I don't think there's much better of a slump buster that you can have than FC Cincinnati, your rival, and just a group of, like, they've got the team from the Big Green or whatever it was, that kids soccer movie. It's with, like, Stanley Tucci as their coach or whoever it is. I mean,
Stanley Tucci would be a better coach.
I do think, you know, maybe you look at getting a bit of a rotation in here, but I think honestly, Caleb Porter is going to go in and should treat this, and the crew should treat this as a must win. Corey talked about, you know, the wins that you need to take or need to get, and those points you need to secure to make it to MLS. And again, if we do see more cancellations, this is going to come down to points per game. So it'll be, you know, important for crew, and it's just as important for Cincinnati. As I'm looking here, they could make they average just 0.76 points per game. I don't think if it comes
it's
down
not,
to that,
it's not going to happen.
It's going to do
it's
it
not going to happen.
Them.
They are the poster children for mathematical chance, and it's very, very slim. And we talk about their bus all the time. The director, this is funny, this guy must be Dutch. The director of the 1994 Keanu Reeves vehicle Speed, where the now late Dennis Hopper was the madman behind the wheel of the bus that was going to explode if they drop below a certain speed. I would say the FC Cincinnati will explode if they go above a certain speed. They are the Speed bus, or the Dennis Hopper bus of soccer. I'll tell you this, Alex, it's going to be boring, right?
Well, I mean, it might be boring. The thing is, yeah, he's built the biggest bus, right? But it's not even a good bus. I mean, it's not like they get nil-nil draws. They still lose. They're just a bad soccer team. And how that, what is his name? Nilkamp or whatever the heck the guy's name is, the director, like, he should already be fired. He yeah. should be fired. Whoever owns their, whoever like is their GM, he should be fired. All these guys should be without a job. Like, it blows my mind that their fans are still like, rah, rah. Yeah, we're going to turn this around. Turn around what? Your team is terrible. You know, we're talking about playoff seeds for Cincinnati. If they want seeds so bad, they need to start like ripping up the grass in one of these stadiums they go to. Not their stadium, because the grass is plastic at Nippert. But you know, they're going to have to figure something out. They're not going to make the playoffs. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs next year. I mean, they could sign Cristiano Ronaldo next week, if, you know, once he recovers from COVID, and he still wouldn't help them win. Like, they are so terrible. They are one of the worst soccer teams I think I've seen, with the possible exception of Chivas USA in their final year. Like, that's the only team that I can think of in the history of Major League Soccer that has like given them a run for the money and just being pathetic. I almost feel bad for their fans.
Alex, do we know for sure that the fans haven't already given up? I mean, they haven't had home dates with fans, have they? Maybe just a smattering allowed in.
So, I mean, I've told you that I have frequented the FC Cincy hashtags for my own, you know, enjoyment over this this quarantine. A few weeks ago, they thought that they were going to sign Mario Götze, who was on a free transfer from was it Dortmund or something like that.
They were
totally convinced. They had traded for that allocation spot or whatever, and they were like, "We're getting Götze. He's coming here. It's going to be amazing." He signed for PSV Eindhoven, I think, and then they were all like, "Oh well, we still got that spot now, so we're going to sign somebody great." Like, no, you're not.
That's more bizarre than QAnon. Yeah, where did they find that? Like, we're just going to sign him. Yeah. We're going to get him.
It's
not going to happen.
It's very reminiscent of like very early Orlando City fans before Orlando City just like beat any optimism out of that fan base and turned them all into like angry internet trolls. Cincinnati will get to that point. They'll get to like 2020 Orlando level. You got to give them some time. They're definitely on an accelerated pace. Like, they're going to get there in 2 or 3 years, I think. The one thing I enjoy is after every loss, you can see all of the people in the comments who are saying that they're not going to pay for season tickets in their new stadium. Really, really enjoyable, high entertainment, highly recommend it. And you also get the classic post-match Jaap Stam interview where he says he's proud of the team and that they did a good job, even though they lost for like the 15th time in a row. So all around, really entertaining, but yeah, they're pathetic.
All right, do we want to make our picks on this right now, or do we want to wait?
Let's do it.
Let's make our picks now. I'm guessing that everyone's will have one half of it as zero, but we'll see. Murph, you go first.
I will have one half of it as zero, and I'm concerned a bit about that this will be another boring 0-0 game. I do think there's motivation, and I think that's the reason I'm going to pick the Crew. But, this offense just hasn't looked right without Darlington Nagbe, obviously Lucas Zelrayon. I did like Pedro Santos, so I think he's probably what helps the Crew get a goal. I think I said this the last time they played Cincinnati, so I've been wrong, or the last two times, so I've been wrong both times. But I'm going to say they score early and get a 2-0 win. You know, you pull Cincinnati out of that parked bus a little bit. So hopefully this time I get it right for the Crew's sake.
All right.
So three little things I want to mention just in terms of some interesting stats that I found as y'all were talking, and I'll get to my picks. So Cincinnati, for one, has one of the weirdest schedules in MLS this year because they've had multiple four-game away stands, and now they have a five-game home stand, which is very weird. They also have the worst goal differential in MLS, along with the San Jose Earthquakes, who are in a playoff spot in the Western Conference with a minus 19 goal difference.
Wow, so that's hard weird. To do.
And Columbus, the last time they didn't score a goal in a game was at Nippert Stadium against FC Cincinnati. Mm. So in terms of my pick, the way I see this game, especially from a Columbus perspective, I think they're very angry after their loss to Montreal. They got a surprising extra couple days of rest with the Orlando postponement and with the negative COVID test. So I see that as a chance for them that they're amped up. They're going to be a little more energetic than we've seen in their last couple of games. You could also see the argument of they haven't been able to train very much because of the fact that they had to do these COVID tests with the Orlando postponement. They might be, you know, rusty or something, but I think they're going to be amped up and energetic to go to Nippert Stadium in FC in Hell is Real Part 50,000. And I'm going to say the same thing as Pat. I think 2-0. The Crew have been finding ways to score, even in their games that they've lost over this stretch. And I think this is a turnaround win. And for Caleb Porter and his team, they know that the Montreal loss was something that was inexcusable. The best teams in MLS don't lose those kind of games. And they know that they have to win this game in order to really have a shot of making a playoff spot within the next 2 or 3 games. So 2-0, Crew.
2-0. All right, Bart.
I'm going to go with, I'm debating whether it's 3 or 4-0, and we'll go on the bit of the conservative side. You know, again, they're still dealing with some issues. So I'm going to say 3-0. And I think it always comes down to with Cincinnati, and for Columbus is getting that early goal. If you're able to do that, they're not able to go into their bus and you're able to exploit them because they're a garbage team. And so I think Columbus, you know, gets that first goal, and that's going to be really important for Crew, because this is a team that hasn't scored early or first for a while too, it seems like. Just find themselves playing from behind. So get that early lead, get Cincinnati uncomfortable. They don't get to park the bus. We're going to go with them. I think this Josh Williams goal is going to come in this one. Off the set piece, as we mentioned, it should have come 2 weeks ago, but it's coming this time.
All right. Fair enough. Alex.
So I've got a couple thoughts about this game. So first of all, I think that we've reached a point in this rivalry where Don Garber has picked up the phone and has called pro referees and has said, "Hey, this is the moment. The fix is in." And has I think we're going to get a really bad officiating pick as a result of that. I think we're going to get Stoika or maybe Marufo. And you know, that could add, you know, a little bit of danger for this particular matchup. So I think it's going to be 3-2. I still think the Crew will win. I think they will overcome the corrupt.
3-2.
I think they'll overcome the corrupt pro referees, match fixing attempt. But I think it's going to be scary. I think it's going to be a scary game. I think you're going to see a lot of, you know, ridiculous yellow cards for the Crew. And we're going to be shouting, you know, they're going to handball in the box and it's not going to get reviewed by VAR. I think it's going to be a weird game. That's my pick. But yeah, I think, you know, this is the moment where, you know, MLS just has to hit the mercy rule for a new team and just say, you know, okay, we need to fix this thing for them. So, I'm worried. Too. We'll see. Pay attention to who they assign for the referee. That's my prediction. The fix is in, guys, but we will overcome because they're that bad.
I don't think the Sim DeYoung jerseys are just going to do it for Harry Mufaro, though. Like, this isn't Blanco. I don't think FC Cincinnati has those guys that can really, you know, that are prominent enough for him to want to, you know, get their jerseys from them.
You know, that's a really, really good point. What company does that FC Cincinnati owner own? Doesn't he own some sort of like a dairy company or something stupid like that? maybe they're paying him in ice cream. I don't know. We'll have to look up what company he owns, and you know, maybe he's being paid in product and not in jerseys this time. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Out of context, Alex, dairy is stupid.
Dairy, conspiracies. I don't know. I'm really confused right now. When you said Cincinnati was going to score 2 goals, you lost me right there. I'm going to say
2 goals on 3 penalties.
Wait, what the hell?
That's insane.
Wait, Alex.
Tarbell's going to save one.
Tarbell's going to save one?
No, it's going to be skied.
Like, oh my God. No, they're going to give the first two to like one of their defenders or something, because they've got no confidence in whatever that DP's name is. I forget his name, but the guy who hasn't scored in like 6 months, they're not going to give it to him. No.
Locadia.
They're going to give the third one to Locadia and he's going to miss.
You've been spending too much time on Facebook, Alex.
To be fair,
if this happens, I am like Nostradamus, right? So yeah, this is you know, I'm calling a big shot here, but yeah, the fix is in. We will overcome.
Yeah, Brian, how could you possibly think that, you know, any Columbus Crew fans would have any conspiratorial lendings, you know, just a day after the 2-year anniversary of saving the crew after the MLS literally conspired to take our team away.
Well, that's a good point. And I saw that the anniversary was upon us. What do you guys remember about how you spent that day?
Oh my goodness.
I actually have a really funny story. Well, not funny, okay. Just a weird story for that day. So that was a Friday, and I was supposed to, I had a wedding scheduled in Cincinnati that I was supposed to leave for like mid-afternoon. And so stuff starts coming out about like, okay, this is happening. So I go over to Endeavor where, you know, everybody gathered. And I am talking to my girlfriend, trying to get out of going to Cincinnati for one of our good friend's wedding, because I felt like this was a more monumental thing than her getting married. And after much debate, we did go to the wedding, but we left the reception rather early, much to the dismay of the bride. And we had two friends that came in from Chicago to go to the wedding, friends from Ohio State, and they were both coming back and staying at my house in Columbus. Or no, we were supposed to stay in Cincinnati that night and drive back in the morning because they were going to the Ohio State game the next day. But I convinced them to also leave the wedding early and come back. So two of this girl's good friends, three of us actually, left the wedding early, drove back to Columbus. I actually got Bart and our friend Ethan to come back out to the bar that night, which doesn't happen very often if you know Bart and Ethan. And I did indeed get to celebrate the fact that the team was staying. And I did it after driving back from Cincinnati at like 90 miles an hour.
So are you friends with these people anymore?
Yes. We have maintained friendship. It took some talking, but we eventually got through it.
And I think I'm the only person here that wasn't in Ohio the day it happened, because I was at college at the University of Illinois, and I remember specifically I was whipping cream cheese in the kitchen at my job because I was preparing for our Sunday morning bagel event that we have at where I worked at the Illini Hillel. And I remember taking my phone out with my hands covered in cream cheese, seeing the news. I think I teared up, and I ran to tell my boss, because my boss is a big soccer fan, because he remembers when I found out that there was a possibility the team would have been lost, and I was fuming and very angry. And I remember, yeah, you know, that was a weird day, but it was a good day too.
Oh man, you're making me hungry for lox. Lox are really good.
Yeah, we had lox. Had whipped plain cream cheese, fresh whipped chive cream cheese. It was good stuff, man.
Oh man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think Ari wins, actually, Murph. Anybody else?
I mean, for me, it was, I was in the office and I got a text with some of the other people in the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Club. And someone said, you know, hey, it's done. It's a deal. And I texted Mike Duffy, state rep, who brought forward the Art Modell law, who's also, you know, full disclosure, my uncle. Just to see, hey, are you hearing this? And what I didn't realize is he was being filmed and interviewed by Sean Kelly, who did the Save the Crew documentary at that time. So apparently I broke the news to him as he was being filmed there and interviewed for it. I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, and Sean mentioned that the Save the Crew documentary, folks, I know everyone's been waiting for a while, should be coming out next year. So that's something exciting. But then, you know, just headed down to Endeavor, and it was just absolutely glorious. I mean, my boss knew I was going to be pretty much worthless, I think, in the office after the news started coming out, and she graciously let me take the rest of the day off.
I remember going to Endeavor and just kind of hanging around, and it was no one really had the full story, and we were waiting for that puff of smoke to come out of a chimney somewhere to tell us that it was official. And we had been through so much that you're standing there going, I don't know. I don't want to get too excited here. I'm just going to have a couple of beers and see what happens. But there's got to be a reason why all these people are here at the same time. And they're all wearing yellow soccer jerseys and singing songs and so forth. So there is something to this. So it was just a magical day because it was so organic.
Yeah.
You know? That's what I remember about it, just that anticipation. But knowing that, you know, I was still at the radio station that particular day and like, well, I don't know, it seems like this is for real. I'm just going to go up there and just hang out, see what happens. And it just, I'm so glad I did, because it was, like I said, it was just this instantaneous, everybody knew where to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a crazy day. I had someone that my family knew who was very, very close to the negotiations, and knew and still knows members of the ownership group. And so I had a little bit of notice earlier in the week that something was in the works, but they weren't sure kind of if it was going to be official or not. And I had, you know, my bosses at work had known that I was trying to be as involved as I could in the whole thing throughout the whole time. And my VP had kind of told me, if, you know, if that day ever comes and it's done, let me know and then leave right away. And so I got into work about 8 o'clock, and about 8:30, 9 o'clock, I got a text message saying it's done. And I went straight to my VP's office, knocked on the door and said, "Hey, this just happened." He just kind of smiled and said, "See you tomorrow." And I walked out, got in my car and, you know, headed home to change out of my work clothes. And, yeah,
it's great boss.
It was, yeah, absolutely great boss and a great day. And, I don't think it even hit me until a couple days later, like, even though it was like, even when it was fully done, right. And it was on the news and everyone who was involved had kind of acknowledged it. It was still one of those things where, you know, part of me was worried that, you know, something might come up, or is this a trap, or, you know, what is going on?
It's a trick.
Yeah. You know, you never know. But I think, you know, what a great moment, what a great movement that was. I'm glad that people still talk about it. To be honest, I don't even like thinking about the whole Save the Crew thing at this point, because it was so stressful. But the end result was incredible. And, you know, I can't wait to see that new stadium. And, you know, at that point, it'll feel completely real. When we're in that new stadium, that new ownership built after Precourt said that, oh, you know, there's no way that we can do any of this stuff. Well, you know, there is a way. Yeah, you just couldn't do it because you suck. So,
and just think, next year we get to play them.
Yeah.
Knowing Garber and knowing MLS, the first Austin FC Columbus Crew game will be on October 12th. That it might happen.
So they would only play once, because Austin's parked in the Western Conference. So, and I'm guessing that MLS will give the game to them to play in their new stadium out in the toxic waste dump. Do we know how the remediation of the contaminated soil is going? Have we heard about anything about how that's going? The 30,000 bicycles that they're going to need to light up for people to ride to the games? I haven't heard anything about them, but I haven't been looking.
Yeah, I stopped.
I don't know
caring.
The plutonium half life.
Yeah, right. I stopped.
Matthew caring. McConaughey Field. I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh yeah, I did see him in an MLS promo a couple of weeks ago. Though
they play that. They play that now at the stadium. They play it like four times a game. So
really,
yeah, he's like the face of MLS now. So.
Well, I think McConaughey is the kind of guy, he's impossible to be angry at, because he's just so weird and chill.
Yeah, I'm happy that he's a part of the league. I'm just unhappy with how it came to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he's the perfect celebrity face for that franchise, because he's always a guy who I've always thought he seems okay, but he seems kind of dumb. I think most of the people in that organization are kind of dumb. So the only good person in the Austin franchise is Weston Applefeller, who will be their groundskeeper guy. Very nice guy. Everybody else sucks. So I actually have in my hand one of the MLS to ATX scarves that they gave away before they were a franchise, that I've kept as a war trophy. And yeah, I like looking at this from time to time, just being like, oh yeah, you guys lost. Like, you kind of won, but you really lost, right? All that talk about, oh, we're going to get your franchise, we're going to get your franchise. Nah, MLS sold your franchise in the middle of the night, dude. Yep. Like, you didn't even know about it. I knew about the fact that your franchise was sold before you did. You suck. Well, I can't wait to beat those guys.
Banter
with Cincinnati's bad. Just wait. Oh my God.
Yeah, well, Austin will be a bigger rival than Cincinnati.
Oh, at this absolutely, point. Absolutely. And the fact that we only get to play once a year, I mean, that game is, it's going to be rough. I mean, I think the players here understand how much this match is going to mean to Columbus Crew fan base. I mean, it's going to be everything. It's like I went to Washington State, so the Apple Cup is huge every year. Yeah. Every year, Washington kicks our ass. And every year I go, I don't care if we lose all of our games. One year we only won one game, and it was beating the Dogs, and I couldn't have been happier. That's how I look at this. It's like we just need to beat them, and I'm going to be happy. That's how much this means to me. Yeah. And I hope, Murph, that the players, do you get a sense that they're going to understand that?
I think that there will still be enough players on the roster because it's still within, you know, a couple years that they will understand. You know, you've got your Josh Williams, your Hector Jimenez's, Giassi Zardes. You know, these guys were here through that. You know, I'm probably forgetting a few guys, but these were guys that were consistently, you know, curious about what myself and Andrew Erickson, who was covering for the Dispatch at the time, were hearing. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest, these guys' lives in terms of where they were going to live were kind of on the line. And I mean, that's true for soccer players all the time. They move around a lot, but that was a unique circumstance. So yeah, I think so. I also think that this ownership group will make sure that they are aware, Pete Edwards in particular. And I think Caleb Porter is the perfect guy to really get involved in that. You know, if you remember when he was in Seattle or in Orlando, excuse me, in Portland against Seattle, like those were big games and they didn't shy away from that. He hasn't shied away from the Cincinnati stuff. It just hasn't been enough of a rivalry. So I do think that there will be, you know, maybe they play it down in the build-up to the game. We'll see. But, yeah, that's going to be a big story. I hope MLS does the right thing and puts the first game in Columbus. If they don't, I will be very curious to see how many Crew fans make that trek.
I was going to ask you guys, if it's safe to go, who's going?
Yeah. It's not Austin. It's not going to be safe to go, and I'm still going.
No. I don't even know where I'll be, so who knows?
And I just want to say this, like, as someone who sat in Nordeca for a very long time, like, there have been a number of altercations with fans, but I've always thought that the amount of security around Nordeca and around the traveling section was a little bit overblown. Like, they need to double it for Austin, in all seriousness. Like, people hate those guys. They legitimately threatened, like, something that meant a lot to people on a very deep personal level, and you know, and they laughed about it, you know, and there are people who are known, like, in that group who were just flat out trolling for that year. Yep. And I know I'm never going to forgive those people, and I, like, know who they are. Like, if I see these people, like, we're going to have some words.
Well, I also want to make the trip, because have you ever plowed through Austin eating?
My
God, what a great town to eat in. I mean, can you imagine being there for like 3 days before the game and just eating tons of barbecue and tacos and pounding some beers, and then finally the game is there, we get on a bus and we ride 30 miles out into the desert or wherever their damn stadium is.
Mm-hmm. Park 45 minutes away.
One day if you want a dream perfect sports weekend, you have Austin FC play Columbus on the same weekend you have an Ohio State Texas football game.
Oh my God.
But I've seen Texas play in like 4 years or something.
So like 2024?
Yeah, they've got a series coming up. I can't remember when, but yeah, that is a possibility. If MLS were smart, they would coordinate that so that, you know, play the Crew Austin game both weekends, like play that the Friday or Sunday night.
Yeah, the most unlikely two cities that could hate each other in America, Austin, Texas, and Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah,
have a weekend of battles.
Yeah, the irony is Austin is one of my favorite cities.
Oh, yeah. They deserve better than Anthony Precourt. Much better than Anthony Precourt.
I'm not gonna judge the entire city of Austin by the fan base of their soccer club. But that's the fan base of the soccer club are obnoxious people. Maybe Matthew McConaughey can get them to chill a little bit. Well, we kind of skipped over NYCFC. We're playing that Sunday at 6 here, and what I remember the last game, and I don't know if NTN's going to play as a starter anyway. I'm sure he's going to play, but I remember his dust-ups with – who was it? Was it Ring and he that were getting
– Tinderholm.
Yeah,
it was Tinderholm. Because Tinnerholm and Ring are both, you just look at these guys, you go, hey, if I'm in a bar fight, I want these guys on my side. They just have those kind of faces, right? And those, they know how to get under your skin. And I imagine, Murph, that they're going to be looking to do that this time.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you saw the last time the crew played NYC, the tactic was to make things ugly. We talked about it a lot afterwards. And those are two guys that certainly play that role. I will be interested to see if we assume that Darlington Nagbe and Lucas Zellerayan are not playing. And I think you're pretty confident on Zellerayan. Maybe Nagbe comes back, but I kind of doubt it at this point for that game. Who becomes that target for them? You know, is it Pedro Santos, who is a guy who is no stranger to falling to the ground, or whatnot. But, yeah, I expect that to, you know, why not take that same tactic that worked the last time? Obviously, the goal came off a mistake by Abubakar Keita, but, you know, you were able to take the crew out of their game plan pretty nicely. So, you know, I expect some sort of physical battle, and the crew have to be better and better prepared for it.
And I think we've forgotten, Ori, that match was so vital for NYC. They were in the toilet then, and they had to get a result in that game. And since then, their prospects have really looked up.
Yeah, I mean, they've got two losses since that win against Columbus, which was a loss at home against Toronto. And just most recently, last Sunday, they lost to New England at home. But other than that, they've been able to win games pretty comfortably. But it's kind of a similar situation that Columbus was in towards the beginning of the regular season. Columbus wasn't really playing very competitive teams early on. They were playing Cincy, Chicago. You saw them, you know, just not play teams that were that good. And now we're seeing Columbus start to play better teams in the league, and we're starting to see some different results. New York City have had this stretch of playing Cincinnati twice. They got to play DC a couple of times, you know, play Inter Miami, and New England has been the only team that's really, you know, been a trip up for them, drawing them in Boston and beating them at Red Bull Arena since they can't play at Yankee Stadium. So I think, first of all, that just shows the testament, I think, of the New England Revolution. I think they're one of the most slept-on teams in the Eastern Conference. They are just secretly just having a very good season that nobody's really talking about. And New York City is on a bit of a high. But losing to New England, I think they're going to want to try and get this win at Columbus, obviously. Big game at Orlando. This is a really big week for New York City. At Orlando, who is just above them in the table. And then at Columbus, who is also currently above them in the table. So if they can get 4 or even 6 points from those two games, then I think people are going to start talking about New York City again being a top Eastern Conference contender, like we were talking about them, you know, back in March when Columbus beat New York City in a game that was always probably going to be a win. New York City had 10 men for 100 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a competitive game, and it'll be interesting to see what the results on Wednesday affect for the Sunday game, because New York City, if they lose to Orlando, it might be another situation. Need to get a result. They might be playing a little bit harder. For Columbus, if they don't get a result against Cincinnati, maybe they're put into those shoes, having 1-4 games back at home, needing to readjust and reaffirm their spot above New York City. So that's going to be a very, very important game. And it'll be Columbus's last home game in October.
Quick question, and I'm only half trolling when I ask this, Ori. Will they be back in Yankee Stadium now that the season's over?
It doesn't look like it, and I know how you're trolling me. No, it looks like they are. It looks like they're going to play New York Derby on November 1st.
In Yankee Stadium?
Well, even if the Yankees won the World Series, then they would have been able to play that game still. I mean, it's not like the Yankees Yankees played two playoff games and beat the Indians both times, so that was fine.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
That's fair play. No, the only reason I asked literally is because I am curious to see if they're better in Yankee Stadium or if they're worse. Because
I don't see how anyone could be better on that pitch.
Well, that's what I'm wondering is, I mean, are they actually, you know, at a disadvantage playing at home when they could play in another stadium that's kind of got more width to it? They seem to have adjusted well to this kind of new setup that they're in. So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts things.
Yeah, I mean, their last three home games, the only loss to New England, but then 4-0 over Cincy and 4-1 over DC. Those are the two worst teams in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah,
they're not playing. They have not been playing competitive teams recently. It's kind of a flip-flop of the crew schedule. They're playing the bad teams later on, and they played the good teams early on. Now they get to play better teams to end the season. Columbus played the bad teams early on, and now they're playing better teams. But Columbus now has a mixture of some pretty bad teams. They get Cincy and DC, you know, in this last stretch of games in October.
Murph, we're hoping to get some guys back for a game like NYC. Who's in, who's out? I'm not so much worried about tomorrow, but Sunday against New York City, any chance that we see Nagy? Anybody else? Maroon? Probably not Zellerial. I mean, he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, I think those two guys are possible. I keep saying this, and Nagy keeps not playing, but he's at the end of that stretch of games, and you know there hasn't been any sort of reported setback that they've let us know about. Now he was listed for the Cincinnati game as medically not cleared to play, as they're labeling it. As was Room, which was the more surprising one. I thought I thought he'd be back for Orlando and was listed not able to play. So.
It was so weird. Remember, it was a non-contact injury. It was just sort of, what was it? Do we know?
We do not, because, again, they don't tell us anything. And Caleb Porter hasn't said on that. He has given us from time to time about the knees and whatnot. But it would not surprise me if either of those guys are back. I do think we could get Alache back. You can see him in the lineup in one of these games this week. He's been off the injury report. He was off of it before the Montreal game, obviously didn't play, but I think the plan was to have him ready for, play at Orlando and give Aiden Morris the first start. So it does sound like they're getting healthier. And I do think that, you know, probably having this game, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but having this weekend off, helps them a little bit too. Just get these guys a little bit of rest and maybe guys that may have been questionable also got a couple days off. So, I think you could see guys start to work their way back in.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see what happens. Let's pick. We're way over time here on the Massport podcast. Let's make our picks for NYC and then we'll get out of here and assemble on around Alex's Twitter feed. Like it's a fall fire in the backyard. And we'll warm ourselves with his sarcasm as we play FC Cincinnati tomorrow. I'm going to start with Alex this time since we usually save you for last. What do you got for NYC?
1-0 win for the crew.
Okay.
I think they'll get it done. I think it's a tough matchup. I mean, this is not a straightforward matchup, but the crew are in relatively good form still. I mean, even when you kind of take the Montreal game out of it, I think the team has looked as good as they possibly can given the injuries. I think we'll have a little bit of time to kind of get these guys rested and get some folks back. I think that you'll see a little bit more rotation against Cincinnati than what you probably would see against a normal team as well. So try to get some tired legs, a little bit of a rest. So I think you'll see a fresh recruit team, still a little bit depleted. So it won't be a blowout or anything, but I think they'll get the 3 points.
All right, Bart.
I'm going to go with a 2-1 on this one. I think I do think Columbus is – defending better, but this is a better NYC team than I think they saw earlier. Maxi Morales is just the guy that Columbus seems to have a hard time with whenever he's on for New York, just 5'2" difference maker. So I think, maybe he gets one, but I still think Columbus is able to put this one together. I think Pedro Santos continues his strong, and he's, I think, one of those guys that is really stepped up in the, absence of Zellerion and Nagy and showing last year wasn't a fluke either. And so I think he gets another and continues to be the catalyst for Columbus.
All right, Ori.
Well, first off, Brian, when you make your picks, you've also got to make your Cincy pick because we haven't heard that yet. I want to hear your.
I know. Well, Alex's 3-2 pick threw me so far off. I was actually going to give Cincinnati a goal. If you must know, I'm going to go back to what popped into my head. Cincinnati scores first in a bizarre sequence of events, and then the crew just swap them, and it's 4-1.
Okay.
How about that?
So 4-1 crew against Cincy. Yeah. I think this New York City game is going to be really, really tough for Columbus, especially because knowing the games that Columbus have played against Cincy, since they've played each other three times already and it'll be a fourth time on Wednesday, it's going to be very physical. And yes, I think the physicality is going to put them in a position where they'll be a little more fatigued. And sure, they're going to have some days of rest, but these are two games that are going to be extra physical compared to other games, Cincinnati and then Sunday against New York. So that's going to make it a little bit tougher. I think if Nagby does play for Columbus on Sunday, I think they win. I don't expect Zellerayan to be back. If Nagby doesn't come back on Sunday, I think it's a draw. I don't expect it to be very high scoring. 2-1 nils for this season. I'm going to say nil-nil. I'm going to say it ends in a nil-nil draw either way. That's what I'm going to go with. I think Columbus will get their home form back for the last two games in November, because they'll be able to actually sit and have a good home stretch in November, assuming they can get a top four seed and host a playoff game. So I'll say nil-nil.
All right, Murph?
I'm interested to just see how the Crew look against Cincinnati. You know, you can say motivated, you can say all those things. I want to see it. And, you know, we already made the Cincinnati picks. I think they're going to win that game. But I think that could carry over into Sunday. You know, you just lost at home for the first time. So I'm going to say that the Crew get a 2-1 win against NYCFC. But if they have a dud of a performance on Wednesday, you know, I'm going to be much less confident in that pick. You know, I think, you know, if you look at the, you know, the bad half against Toronto really stands out, but not a bad game all in all on the road against Dallas. And then obviously the stinker last week. So the form's not great, but it's also not terrible. You know, I just want to see them look confident again, like the team we saw most of this season against Cincinnati.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking that Tinnerholm and Antien finished the bout that was started in that last match, and they both swing at each other and are both sent off. So we play 10 aside for a vast majority of the second half. And with all that extra space, the Crew score 3 goals and beat NYC 3-0. How's that for a weird pick, all right?
I like it.
Brian's got the weird picks today. I mean, the MLS is weird. Like, I like saying that San Jose fact that I said like 30 minutes ago, that's just really effing weird that a team had this conceded almost 50 goals might make the playoffs. That just shows the weirdness of MLS.
I embrace it. I love weirdness. I'm a Seahawks fan. Come on. You want weirdness?
Best team in the NFL.
You want weirdness? Just watch one of their games. They're all strange, so I embrace it all. All right, I don't think any of my picks have come true. There was one where it was an Olympico that Josh Williams stole from Zellerayan to score a goal, and that one didn't come true. So don't listen to me. I'm a crazy, raving lunatic. But I will tell you, please, if you like lunacy or our takes on the Crew and just a lively discussion, please like and comment wherever you consume the Massive Report podcast. Please, only 5 stars and positive comments. As I mentioned, our egos are very, very fragile, especially mine. Murph, Ori, Bert, Alex, thank you so much. Great job, fellas. We'll assemble again either next Monday or Tuesday and figure out what's going on from there. Who knows what we're going to have to talk about by then. My name is Brian. I appreciate you listening to the Massive Report podcast.